Right. Okay. So to begin with, I'm just going to say I'm Claire Coyne. I'm interviewing Helen Mitchum on Wednesday, the 5th of November, Bonfire Night or Guy Fawkes Night, 2014, in Tunbridge Wells for the Mithras Oral History Project. So, Helen, I've mentioned your name, but if you could introduce yourself, that would be great, with your year of birth.
Yes, I'm Helen Mitchum. I was born in 1948.
And whereabouts were you born?
I was born in Mitcham, actually, in Mitcham Station, as it was then. hangs another tale.
I was going to say, your first few years all sound quite dramatic. That's great. Brilliant.
So my parents were living there at the time,
I'd say. Did your dad work on the railway?
Yes.
Ah. And was that his main occupation in his
work? Yes, he worked for the railways for 50 years, I think.
Goodness.
In the days when people did that sort of thing.
Yeah, oh, that sounds wonderful to me, but I don't know what the reality would have been. And did your mum work at all?
Not when I was young.
And what did she do later?
She worked in a record shop in Tunbridge Wells, classical records. She was very keen on classical music. I can't remember what else she did. Sorry.
That's fine, no problem. And whereabouts did you go to school in Tunbridge Wells then?
I went to school in Morden, not far from Mitcham, until I was 11, and then my parents moved down to Mark Cross, which is just outside Tunbridge Wells, and I started at the grammar school in Tunbridge Wells then. That would be 1959.
And how would you describe your main occupation?
It's quite hard, really, because I'm supposed to call myself a foot health professional, I think it is. But I used to be a chiropodist, but they changed all the rules, you see, so I had to get used to something else. But nobody knows what a foot health professional is anyway, and they always call me the chiropodist or the foot lady or the chiropodist. So I do go around, I visit people in their homes, and I make their feet comfortable, and they're very pleased, and they give me money for it, which is rather wonderful.
Sounds great. Our feet, you know, do a lot of hard work and get neglected far too much as far as I'm concerned. So, okay, that's great. It's lovely just to get a tiny bit of context and background. But we can plunge in now. Oh, you see, I'm using all the appropriate metaphors here, but we'll get to that. We can go straight to your visits to the Temple of Mithras. And I am going to begin by asking you what your overriding memory or impression of it was.
Well, I was very young, and I probably wouldn't have remembered very much about it at all if it hadn't been for a little accident that I had when I was there, which impressed it very firmly into my memory. We went because my mother read about the discovery of the temple and was very excited about it, wanted to go, but she couldn't abide crowds. And I don't know if I'm remembering this right, but my father worked for, it would have been the Southern Railway, I think, in those days. And the temple was found either on land that belonged to the railway or there was some connection with the railways that enabled him to have contacts there and to help us to go on a day when the general public were not normally admitted. I don't know whether it was just a particular day or later or earlier than usual, but I'm fairly sure that's right. That we got in when there weren't really many other people around. And what I remember most clearly was that there was a plank bridge over some water, and some men, I don't know if they were archaeologists or what they were, explained to us that the river Walbrook had been underground for a long time, and during the excavation they'd uncovered it and the water was now visible. So there was this plank bridge across this water, and I suppose I wasn't really paying total attention to what was being said, but I suddenly realised that my mother was on this plank bridge, and there were people between me and her, and I had a little panic and decided I needed to get to her, and I thought I could squeeze along behind the people on this bridge to get to her, but I failed and I fell into the water, which I don't remember very... I don't remember the actual falling, but what I really remember is being taken to this hut, and there was a brazier there, which is a very funny word for a six-year-old to remember, but I'm sure it's right, because I didn't really know what a brazier was, but I'm sure that somebody must have said, oh, there's a brazier there, and that was obviously a very important thing, that there was this thing there. And I was taken into this hut, and there were quite a... As I remember it, there were quite a few people around. I was standing in front of this brazier, and a towel must have been found. I think somebody produced something to dry me down with. I don't know how wet I got, whether it was just a few inches or what it was. I really don't remember that. But I do know that I was wet enough for my knickers to be wet. And my mother insisted on taking them off in front of all these people and trying to dry them in front of the fire, which caused me the most embarrassment and humiliation, utter humiliation, of being having my knickers taken off in front of all these men. And that's, I think, is why I remember it so clearly. And the only other thing was I was given some pebbles from the bed of the river. Five, if I remember rightly. And I've got a feeling, I was wearing gloves. I don't know whether it was a very cold day, but I've got a vague recollection of putting them inside my glove to take them home safely. But that seems quite a lot of pebbles to get into a small girl's glove, so I may have made that up completely. But anyway, that's about it, really. That's all I remember, I think, from the... presumably we then went home rather quickly.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. What a lovely story.
Maybe for you.
Well, there is that, isn't there? So given that it, you know, it was quite dramatic, is it something that's, you know, has come up on and off throughout your life as a story that you've told people, and then have you had other conversations following on from that about Roman history and Mithras and that kind of thing?
Not very often. I have occasionally wondered whether I'm the only person ever to have fallen into the Walbrook, still be alive today, which is just a chance, because it's quite nice to be the only person ever to have. But I haven't really talked about it very much, although it's always been a very clear memory. I think I should like to add that I didn't research anything before writing to you, because I thought it was better for you to have my memories green and as they were, rather than say, well, whether it really any of them were actually true or not, because I know memories are very unreliable things. So I, there may be quite a lot in there that is not true at all, but that's how I remember it.
No, that's absolutely great. I completely take your point.
Well, the only thing I did a few years ago, I did, thinking about the story, check the name of the river, because I don't think I actually remembered that from childhood. But that is, you know, not recently.
Mm, but you're spot on with the name.
Yes.
So I know you were quite tiny at the time. You were six, weren't you? Mm. So people I've been chatting with who are a bit older than you when they went, for many of them, the experience of going to the site triggered, you know, an interest in archaeology, which, you know, might have endured most of their lives. And I'm wondering if you've had any particular interest in archaeology or history or Roman history, or if that was just an isolated incident for you?
Yes, I've always been interested in history. And history and archaeology generally. I've got actually an MA in regional history, but don't know whether it's connected. I think it was something my mother was always interested in, so that's probably where it came from, that she would tell me about these things. And I used to be... This is why I think... If it hadn't been for the incident, I wouldn't remember very much, because my mother was quite keen to take me around to interesting old places, and I really got the very haziest memory of them, apart from this one. So although she was keen to try and instill me in me these wonderful ancient things, I don't really think much of it went in.
So you went to lots of other places then while you were growing up?
Yes.
So it was handy that your dad worked for the railway and there was possibly that connection with the land, but it wasn't the only reason you went, because your mum would have been interested anyway in the site.
Oh yes, but I doubt if she'd have wanted to, she would have put up with the great queues, because huge numbers of people wanted to see it, weren't there? So she possibly wouldn't have actually gone if it meant a long queue and huge numbers of people. But I think she thought, oh, if we can use this, we can make use of Dad. I don't think he was ever particularly interested.
Right. when you were sort of researching the name of the river and stuff, and perhaps before that, did you ever spend any time sort of looking into the Mithraism or the Mithras cult or anything like that? Did it mean much to you all those years later?
Well, it has done since, because I took up Latin about 10 years ago. It's a sort of, I thought it was good for the brain, you see. My mother had dementia at the end of her life, and so I started doing Latin, and so of course it has come up in the course of that, and being very interested in the Emperor Hadrian, and you know, going to an exhibition about him and reading about him. So I don't know. I think it's probably just an ongoing thread, rather than that visit would kind of pop up, you know, whenever ever anything in that area, whenever I came across anything to do with the Romans or Mithras, I'd always remember the story. So yes, I think it probably did. It's kind of a special thing that you went to do, you know.
Did you see, you know, the temple? There was all that furore about what to do with the temple once they discovered it, and then eventually it was resited a bit further down the street. Did you ever go to see it once it had been resited?
No, I don't think so, but then I might not have remembered.
Yeah, and I mean, it looked very different.
Yes.
So, and it sounds like you probably haven't, but you wouldn't have any photos or newspaper clippings or diary entries or anything?
Nothing like that. I'm
either
afraid.
Of your mum or
no,
dad's
or
Nicholas.
No. I think this is one of the pebbles, though. But
oh,
I'm not
really?
Sure. I'm really not sure. It's something I seem to remember having forever.
Well, it's lovely, isn't it? It's so stripy, like you say.
But
it's amazing.
I'm really not entirely sure. If it resembles others, and it probably is, but I'm you know, a pebble is much like a pebble, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. This is particularly stripy and very regular lines.
Mm.
Well, very straight,
yes.
I should say, rather than regular, I suppose. And can you remember who gave you the pebbles?
Well, some man at the site. I suppose they would have been an archaeologist. I don't know. Or somebody helping on the site, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So that was your kind of consolation.
But I had for years and years, I had the five together, and somehow they've got, you know, grandchildren have got at them all, you know, things happen.
It's funny, isn't it, how things just stay the same like that in terms of material objects that you kind of, you value, even if they, you know, they might not have you know, financial value. And then they do just suddenly disperse, and you don't even notice, and you can't pinpoint what.
Because at some time, something else seemed more important, and they all put in with the other things, and yeah.
So you mentioned grandchildren. I'm not sure how old they are. Is your interest in history, is that something you've tried to share with younger generations and spark interest there? And
yes, but unsuccessfully, largely. My granddaughter's very keen on the Middle Ages, and you know, all what are the series they've had recently, the you know, the long running, vaguely medievally history fantasy things.
Yes,
you know,
I don't watch telly.
George
R.R.
Martin stuff.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I didn't pay attention. And Philippa Gregory, those series of books, she was all into. So I took her to see Henry the one of the Shakespeare history plays, and she obviously knew far more about it than I did. She was quite familiar with all the characters, so she's keen on that sort of thing.
And if you were to try and sum up why history is meaningful for you, what would you say?
I was very much put off history at school, actually. I was interested before I went to the grammar school, but I didn't. I think it was the way it was taught, the way it was very much facts and kings and battles. I lost interest. I think I didn't even do O-level. It wasn't until much later when my mother got talked into doing some research into the family tree by a relative in Australia, because she was the only living relative in this country. And I didn't really want to do it, but she couldn't quite cope with doing the research, and so I'd take her out. And I had this one of these Road to Damascus moments in East Sussex Record Office when we'd got far enough back to actually call up a real parish register. And of course, in those days, this is quite a few years ago, you actually got the real thing. You didn't have to rely on microfilm or whatever. And actually holding a parchment book with all this ancient writing in, I thought, wow, this is so old. This is wonderful. I want to do this. And I then actually started to do history again, but social history. And I then got a chance to do an MA at Brighton University, which was it was mainly social history, and that's what I really love. It's people, so it's I've sort of come right round to actually be interested in people and how they lived, and the artifacts they use, and what life was like in comparison, how similar people are and how different at the same time. So that's what's really interested me.
So that's what it gives you. It gives you a sense of continuity while also highlighting some of the sort of practical differences of how we live on a daily basis, but the fact that we're all actually connected as well. Mm.
Yes, I've continued. I've got a great interest in buildings, funnily enough. I haven't even made the connection there, but architecture is a great passion of mine. I've just come back from Iran, because I was, again, went to an exhibition. The one following the Hadrian one I mentioned was one on Shah Abbas of Iran, and I was completely bowled over by the buildings in his capital, Isfahan, and promised myself I'd go and see them for real, so I've just done that.
Wow.
It's a pretty good place for a holiday. Tell your friends.
It sounds, everything I hear about Iran sounds absolutely amazing. I hadn't really thought of visiting there, though. I don't know why. What was it like getting a visa and things like that?
Well, a bit tedious.
Yeah.
Yes, it takes a long time.
Mm.
It's not really a problem. Somebody has to go and get it from Frankfurt, I think, because there's no embassy in London.
And how long
I've got a very good contact if you want.
Oh,
good
God.
Guide.
Oh,
so
yes.
Just
absolutely. I might come back.
I'll give you his card. Tell all your friends.
How long did you go for?
12 days.
Mm. And was it an organised tour?
Yes, but it was a tailor made one, because I didn't want to do a tour about the whole of Iran, because I felt it was too big and it would involve spending too much time travelling. So I pushed the boat out and have one just for me from the places I particularly wanted to go to: Shiraz, Yazd, and Isfahan. And so I had my guide all to myself the whole time. And yes, he was tall, dark, handsome, and 28. No.
Worth going just for that?
Well, it was wonderful, absolutely. I just brought that rug.
It's gorgeous. I noticed it as soon as I came in. It's absolutely lovely. So, beautiful colours.
Can't resist it.
Mm, I don't blame you. I mean, you've got to bring back the memory from, well, more than a memory, a physical memory from somewhere like that.
Yeah. Of course, the buildings are just absolutely out of this world.
Mm. Oh, I can imagine. Well, that's all I can do is imagine, really. But, it's got so much culture, hasn't it? And history. Wonderful.
Very friendly, too.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, actually. Mm.
People would come up and say, oh, welcome to Iran, please tell your friends to come. Mm. Actually, there were quite a few parties from Germany, France, Italy, Netherlands, Far East, but nobody else that I met actually from Britain.
Hmm, interesting.
Which is a shame, really. It really is much, much better than you think. People kept saying to me, you must be mad, or, you know, is it safe? you're very brave. It's... But I'm actually none of those things.
Oh, God, well, it sounds wonderful. I was just going to go back to you learning Latin, actually, and I was just going to ask a bit more about what that was like to learn Latin in your 50s, by the sounds of it, was it?
Yes, yes.
And how far did you get?
Well, I'm still doing it.
Oh,
there are only three of us in the class, and we've got to a sort of A-level standard. And but of course, it's very difficult to remember things, and we only do it once a week, so we make fairly slow progress, but we do enjoy it immensely. And there's nothing serious about taking exams or anything. We just read literature, and then we have to do grammar from bits of grammar. She won't let us off the grammar. So
where do you do it?
Oh no! In our own homes, we go around from one to another, at the teacher's home.
So it's a private teacher.
Yeah.
And you just you've commissioned her.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's. I'm still not fluent. I still find if I go and see an inscription, and people will say, "Oh, you know Latin," and you can't, because it's quite likely to be medieval Latin anyway, and it's all abbreviations, and you know, you it's not actually like reading something on a printed page at all.
Well, exactly, and probably it's the stonework is a bit damaged and things like that, so it's very, very difficult to read. It's a bit like when people say you speak Italian, you know what's going on in the opera, but you can't necessarily hear clearly what people are saying. So I imagine it's similar. Well, that sounds lovely as well. So you've been doing it for several years then?
Oh yes, yes, yeah. It must be 8-9 years, I should think. So
and what do you like about it?
I do like grammar. I like learning languages anyway. I find the grammar fascinating, even though I can't remember it, or not without prompting. And it's very interesting to learn about the Romans. And of course, in Iran, they're very proud of their statue of relief carving, actually, of King Shapur the First, who beat the Romans. And he's got Philip the Arab kneeling at his feet. And I've forgotten what the other emperor was, but anyway, he beat two Roman emperors. The Romans keep fairly quiet about it, I think.
I can imagine. Oh, well, that's lovely. I feel like there was going to be something else I was going to ask you. I suppose going back to the friend you mentioned whose father was an archaeologist on the site. I know you mentioned she or he is younger than you.
Yeah.
But yes, if you were able to ask them if they might have any ephemera or anything from their dad. And there's nobody else you know that went to Mithras, went to the site?
No.
Okay. No. And how did you hear about the project? Was it on the radio or...?
Yes, it was. It was on the Today programme?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Great.
That's right, yes.
Okay, is there anything else you'd like to add? Because I think we're probably more or less wrapped up. But...
Not what I can think of at the moment. It's all rather exciting being interviewed, actually.
Great.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been an absolute
be ready for
pleasure.
John Humphreys next.
Yeah, he might be a bit more hardcore than me. Although he seems to think he's mellowed, doesn't he? That's what he says anyway.